Alright, welcome everyone to another exciting episode of the League of Mediocre Gentlemen.
This is the government shutdown edition as well.
Oh, it is.
There's so much additions in this one. I'm your host, Richard Martindale.
Yes, whatever you just said, yes.
With me is Patrick Weaver and Ian Shaw.
I'm back, I think.
Yes, I can hear you guys, and that's the important part. The question is whether or not Ian can hear us.
I can hear Patrick.
All right, good. Yeah. Then we're all here. Welcome, guys, to December 21st, according to this recording. Are we, do you want to just jump right into it? Do you want to start with whatever news we've got from the winter meetings?
Yeah, I think that's a good idea.
I mean, there's not much. It's not like the winter meetings has had a lot of activity.
It's been pretty quiet.
Yeah.
Zach Britton and Manny Machado.
Hells yeah. With
they're
nothing.
They're dictating the market. Everyone's waiting for that Zach Britton market to settle.
Ooh.
If anything, there's better news like outside of the winter meetings right now. Like Profar just went to the A's. How the mighty have fallen, I guess. I don't know if you could ever call him mighty though, but how the hype has fallen. And
can you describe in simple terms how that is good news?
It's news. It's good news for the Rangers, maybe.
Yeah.
Andrew Miller just signed with the Cardinals for 2 years.
I did hear that.
Yeah,
I think him and Goldie and Bryce Harper are gonna do really well on Sam.
Yeah, I think that's kind of cool. Well, wait, Bryce Harper. yeah, St. Louis is looking interesting. I'm kind of excited to see what their team does next year. On paper, looks good. Ian Machado finally met with your Phillies.
Yes, he did. The meeting went 4.5 hours, which I'm gonna try to spin as a good thing.
It's a long meeting.
It was longer than the other two teams when he met with the Yankees and the White Sox. So, but I mean, like, you know, it's just grasping at straws. Like, you know, we have absolutely no idea what was said. We don't even know if any offers were officially made. And of course they're like, it's in the agent's hands now. So.
Well, like, Boris wasn't there, right? It was just a personal meeting.
Well, Machado is not, Boris isn't his client or isn't his agent. It's some other guy.
Oh, I thought, why did I think it was Boris?
Because
Boris has
Harper,
right?
Yeah, Boris is Harper's agent. Right. But as far as I know, his agent was there. I mean, I can't imagine a reason why he wouldn't be. So, like, but, you know, it seems like the general consensus is that the Phillies and probably the White Sox are both going to be willing to pay more money for Machado than the Yankees will. So the Yankees are probably going to be hoping that the allure of playing for the Yankees will make up for that. Machado has not like really given any hints as to whether or not like how much money plays into his decision. So it's kind of hard to know if like, hey, an extra $20 million from the Phillies would be more important than just like being in pinstripes. So we're kind of flying blind. It's not really like he seemed like, again, it's like you're parsing a lot of like stuff that you can easily, you know, spin the other way if you're on the other side of the argument. But the Phillies, you know, the fans, there were fans outside the stadium knowing that he was there. I thought that was kind of cool. Very Philly like, you know, he signed a couple autographs. I thought that was neat. So it doesn't mean anything, but, you know, at least he got a little bit of a feel for the town. So hopefully we'll find out something sooner rather than later, but the way these things have been going, it could be well into January before anything happens. So
curious as to opinions on this kind of victory tour overall, with whether we're talking Machado or anybody else, because like this isn't like the 1970s where he doesn't really know anything about Philadelphia, or like Goldie needing to go around St. Louis in order to be convinced that it's a great town. Like, because we're all interconnected the way we are, he pretty much knows everything there is to know about Philadelphia if he cares enough to know it. And so do you really think that these meet and greets and visits and stuff, not just for Machado, but like for all baseball players, have that big of an impact, or do you think that they're not really, they're just more for show?
Richard, do you want to go first? You want me to go first?
No, you go first, because this is directly also... I want to hear the Philadelphia perspective as well from you.
I mean, I don't really care. You know, if I were in his position and I was a great baseball player and these teams invited me to their town to be wined and dined and try to convince me to go play for them, I don't think I'd say no. Like, I don't think that this is a situation where Machado asked for these meetings. I'm pretty sure it was one where the teams reached out and he scheduled them with the ones he was interested in. Because he only met with the White Sox, the Yankees, and the Phillies. Because I'm pretty sure that those were the only ones willing to go over a certain dollar amount. That's why I'm not sure that the money matters at this point, because I'm pretty sure that these are the only three teams that were willing to go close to what he wanted monetarily. And now that he's gotten close, he's looking for other stuff. So, and I don't know, it's not just like, hey, it's great to play in this city. It's probably also trying to, like, you know, how LeBron did. He wanted to hear the team vision and stuff like that. But the difference was that LeBron made it into a very, very big media spectacle, which I don't think that baseball players typically do. I don't expect Machado to, like, announce where he's going on some, like, live cast on Twitter or something. So
it's apples and oranges, though.
Now, I mean, it's 2018. Like, he did a live cast on championships. Twitch.
Like, LeBron by himself and basketball players by themselves win championships. Baseball players don't.
That is not the case in baseball. But no, I don't have a problem with this tour or whatever you want to call it. Like, if I were in his position and I got told, hey, we'll fly you out here and you can go get dinner at a really expensive restaurant and we'll tell you why you should play for us, I'd be like, sure, fuck it. Awesome. Sounds great to me.
Yeah, I kind of agree. I think mostly it's just because it hasn't been as bombastically loud. Like, the only media stuff I've really heard through this whole ordeal is just the question of, like, oh, where's he going to sign? But I don't hear, like, Machado making huge, like, sweeping LeBron-like-esque sort of spectacles and whatnot about it. Or,
if you're asking if you think it matters, I do think it matters. Like, I don't know that he would necessarily go through all this trouble if he had 100% made up his mind. Yeah. I think if he had... that's not to say I don't think he's leaning somewhere. You know, it's probably like, I mean, it's natural to probably be leaning in a direction or something. But I think if he had already 100% made up his mind, then they wouldn't be going through all of this.
Patrick, as the unbiased version of these three teams, which one, if you had to rank these teams in likelihood of which one he'd sign between White Sox, Phillies, and Yankees, how would you rank them as from most likely to least likely?
Yeah. So I'm glad that you said that, because
I can't ask Ian. He's a Phillies fan. he'll either overcorrect and have Phillies last, or he'll undercorrect and Phillies will be first.
Right. I'm glad you asked that, because I was, right after you guys had given your responses, I was going to make bold predictions.
Okay.
About Manny Machado. So, assuming that we're only talking about the three teams and that there's not, like, the Dodgers or something.
If you want to put, like, a fourth team ranked in there as just, like, the wild, as any wild card, like, team, it doesn't have to be a specific team. You could just be, like,
right,
number four. So, like, I think number two is any team could just, like, swoop in and grab them. You could do that.
So I think if we're looking at it on an even playing field, I'm going to give you two lists, okay?
All right.
And one of them's even playing field in that we're not talking about money. We're just talking about, like he likes the contract he's offered by each of these teams.
Right.
Okay. So that's the first list. So that'll go in order of, you say most to least or least to most?
Most to least.
Okay. So I think in that case, it's going to be the Phillies, the Yankees, the White Sox, and then wild card.
Okay.
If we're talking not equal in the sense that, like, the money that he could potentially get, I think that the Phillies are still the most likely to sign him.
Okay.
I think that he's most likely to take a pay cut and go to Chicago so that he can bro it out with his cousin.
Okay.
And then I actually put the Yankees in third on this list because I don't feel like the Yankees are going to offer him enough. And he's going to be like, fuck you, I'm going to go someplace where I can make money.
It does seem weird that the Yankees would offer him, like, if they were to offer him more, it would be weird since they have, like, all they're really looking for is a shortstop or someone to hold the line until Didi Gregorius comes back from...
Well,
that Tommy John in, like, June or July.
I, if they get Machado back, then they'll probably, like, because Gregorius...
they'll probably deal with Gregorius or something.
His contract runs up in 2020. So, I mean, like, if they get Machado, then that means that Gregorius is probably heading out at some point.
Right. Yeah, probably, but...
They also have to start thinking about, like, this is the thing why the Yankees, to me, are financially not in as good of a spot, because, you know, at some point Aaron Judge is going to, they're going to have to pay him. They've got the Stanton contract on the books for a while. I don't know how much of that the Marlins ate, but there's still some money on the books there. You know, there's a lot of money in that lineup that's, you know, eating up their pocketbooks. So I don't know.
And I mean, George is dead. So
it'd be completely different, because he don't give a shit about the luxury tax. He'd be like, go get him. I don't care how much it takes.
Right.
Like Harper, Machado, you're getting one of them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I am curious. So Machado's the one in the news right now just because he's met with teams. But of the two, between Machado and Harper, which would you rather have for your team going into next year? If you can only have one, I mean, I'm not saying that the Phillies couldn't get both if they wanted to, but
I mean, I think gun to my head, probably Machado, because,
oh man, what's your problem?
having him and Segura in that infield increases our infield defense so much. It's ridiculous. Like, we had the worst defense by a wide margin last year. Then that's like it frees up. It makes it, you know, moves. It definitively moves Reese Hoskins back to first, and you know that's. The lineup looks great that way, and you know he's supremely talented. But to be honest, it really doesn't matter to me as long as we get one of them. Like that's.
I mean, you still got Andrew McCutchen, and Reese Hoskins could go into the outfield as well. I don't know how.
Hoskins is probably the worst.
I was going to say, I don't remember how well he was in the outfield, though. Yeah,
we really don't want him in the outfield. But, like, no, seriously, like, you know, I like the moves we've made so far in the sense of the Segura move was really good.
Yep.
McCutchen is fine because we're not really paying that much for him. And I liked getting rid of Santana. Look. Bottom line is that we planned our entire rebuild around this year's free agency. Like this was the timeline was set up so that we would make the big leap this off season, knowing what was on the market. If we don't sign one of them, I don't think that there's any way that you can say that it's not a catastrophic failure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree.
And I'll go one step further, Ian. Like the idea here, I feel like, signing Machado would be nice, and I stand by my bold predictions of he's most likely to go to Philadelphia. However, I feel like if they don't sign Machado, or even if they do, Harper fits into the lineup infinitely better. That, like, do they need to replace Nick Williams in the outfield?
No, I don't disagree. You can make an argument that either of them would fit. I really hope that whoever they sign, like assuming they sign someone, that they sign that person first. Mm-hmm. Because if they don't, like let's say, for example, Machado decides he's going to be a Yankee, the pressure for us to sign Harper is going to be enormous. And we're going to, as much as we're probably going to overpay regardless, we're going to overpay by a lot if we're in a position where we have to sign one of them second.
So. Right.
All right. One more hypothetical for you, Ian. And Richard as well.
thank you.
So if the Yankees sign Machado, do they then try to flip Giancarlo Stanton so that they can sign Harper?
I don't think it makes financial sense.
I don't think they'll have enough time.
Well, it's not that. I don't know how they're going to be able to make that work money-wise. Like, who's going to eat, like, a significant amount of contract?
Yeah.
The Dodgers?
I mean, isn't that always the blanket answer, though? They haven't really been like that.
Why don't we sign Harper?
Yeah.
This is the Mariners and the Padres' bread and butter, though. I mean, just put them on speed dial, bro.
I think that you can also do the same with the Diamondbacks because they're pretty dumb about money sometimes.
Yeah.
It seems like a lot of moving parts for not a significant upgrade.
You don't think
Like, you know, you are not doing anything until Machado's
hot. Hey, guys.
I don't care if this goes to April.
You guys cut out on me. Sorry. Both of you did. It was really weird. I missed the part where Patrick was like, you don't think blank. And I'm assuming you're going to say you don't think Harper is an upgrade to Stanton.
And I said that I think that he is, but last year's numbers, if you're like the new Yankees are a numbers team, and by last year's numbers, he wasn't. So it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to do like such a convoluted trade to get a marginal upgrade.
I wouldn't say he's worse or better. I kind of just think it's a lateral, like Harper's a different type of player than Stanton. So you're trading like pure power and what Stanton, that kind of stuff that Stanton brings, but for Harper, which is a little bit more balanced, but a little bit less and has a bit more injury risk, which is hilarious to say next to Stanton because he himself is usually injury risk.
It could be a massive injury risk.
Yeah.
So when does Machado sign? When do we think?
I think if he doesn't sign
January 23rd. Lock it in for me.
If he doesn't sign before Martin Luther King Day, he won't sign until spring training.
I think he's going to sign before Martin Luther King Day. I think he'll take the holidays to think about it, and then I think in the first 2 weeks of January we'll get an answer.
It's getting close to my 23rd date.
Yeah. Cool. Sounds good.
All right, guys. Any other winter meetings?
Ho, ho, ho!
I was going to say, any other winter meeting stuff you want to talk about? No, let's just go right into the actual winter. Guys, Christmas is, what is it, 4 days away? Yeah.
It's supposed to be 70 degrees here on Christmas.
It's
love it.
60 degrees where I'm at right now.
Terrible.
Sorry.
No, you start, Richard.
Okay. Let's talk about things we've always enjoyed about Christmas. At least one of the things I have enjoyed is the Christmas movies. And since we talk on movies a lot in this podcast, why not do some Christmas movies? And we kind of tried to do this last year with, I think, the other podcast. So now I think this one's setting it up in the beginning. It's like the last year when that episode came out, it was sort of like it all of a sudden just became movies talking at the end. So now we can kind of do this straight from the beginning of let's talk movies, but specifically Christmas movies. And I wanted to see what you guys had in terms of the best Christmas movies you guys can, that you always have to watch during the year. And then the ones that you'll never touch again, and they're the worst Christmas movies you've ever seen.
So before we start this, can I add a caveat?
Yes, maybe.
So I was watching, when I'm at home, my parents watch Good Morning America in the morning.
Okay.
And so they apparently...
Whoa, you're saying they don't watch it in the evening?
No, they don't record it and watch it in the evening like a bunch of weirdos.
I'm getting to that point where the dad jokes are just flowing.
I know, it's pretty bad.
Do people watch it, like record Good Morning America?
I'm sure
they hope not.
They were watching, and there was a segment, apparently whatever studio made the movie, I can't remember. They Die Hard, there was a new trailer that came out for it for like a DVD promotion. And they were marketing it as a Christmas movie. So
perfect.
So that does that put to bed finally saying that Die Hard is a Christmas movie?
Yes. So the only person who thinks Die Hard isn't a Christmas movie is Bruce Willis. But the writer himself for the script had come out and said, of course it's a Christmas movie. You've got a father trying to reunite with his family. There's Christmas elements the entire way through. It's a classic. It's just classic, he said.
Patrick, what say you? I think it's one of those arguments that it just doesn't really matter and people need to shut the fuck up.
Yeah. It's mostly a joke, to be honest.
Like, for example, okay, so when I was doing my preparation for this segment, I was looking at Christmas movies just to refresh my memory of ones I've seen. And Edward Scissorhands comes up as a Christmas movie.
Really?
And which makes sense because like the plot line kind of coincides with Christmas, at least in the second half of the movie. But it's not something that I would ever consider a Christmas movie. Now, do I care if one of you were to say, oh, one of my top three Christmas movies I love to watch every year is Edward Scissorhands? I might judge you a little bit because I think that that's really not the best choice, but I'm not going to go on to some rampage about like elitism of Christmas movies. So, and the best example of that, and a great segue, is A Nightmare Before Christmas. A lot of people love that movie. I love that movie a lot. It's one of my favorite Disney movies. However, I never watch it during Christmas, and I don't feel that it's a Christmas movie. I always watch it in the Halloween season. So I don't include that on any of my lists, even though if I were to include it on like my top Disney movie list, it would be at or near the top. So it doesn't really matter too much to me, and I think people really overreact on these little pigeonhole statements about what are Christmas movies and what are not.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, again, I think the Die Hard one is mostly just a joke that has gone on really long now, and people are starting to react to it negatively for some reason, and then which makes people who were starting the joke start to defend themselves more like passionately than they need to, and it's now reached this pinnacle thing of just like, oh my god, guys, you can just shut up, like, who cares now?
Yep.
Ho ho ho, now I have a machine gun.
So are we gonna do best ones first or worst ones first?
What do you guys think? I was thinking best, start off positive, and then we can ramp ourselves up
into
a frenzy.
Let's do positive first.
And then, so yeah, let's start with a couple of our best. I don't know if I want to put an exact number on it, but I was thinking at least maybe 3 or 5 that you usually watch, because I know there's a lot of Christmas movies out there, so it's hard to, once you start naming some that you really like, it's hard to kind of stop.
Well, who goes first?
Ian, alphabetically.
Did you say me? Sorry, you cut.
Yeah.
Yes. Alphabetically.
Okay. So I will say my favorite, the one that I always have to watch, and I try to always watch it on Christmas Eve, is It's a Wonderful Life.
It's a good one.
It's a classic. I've watched it since I was a kid. It actually, as I've become an adult, it has a tendency to make me like more emotional as I watch it. Just, I don't know, themes of family and everything, and you know, when time, you know, having you know, believing in that things aren't always as bad, like even when times are hard and stuff. I feel like you don't really connect to George Bailey as much when you're a kid, but when you're an adult, you have a tendency to sort of relate to him more. So, you know, I think it's a great film. That's the classic, like, you know, really low risk answer to that.
I wrote my senior paper using that movie.
Yeah, I mean, it's a classic. What can you say? But I'm shocked at how many people actually have never seen it. Like, it's, which is really bizarre to me, because I thought like everyone had seen it, but I guess not. I'd say
this is old, I think.
Yeah, I think like, that's the thing. A lot of people get turned off by black and white films for some reason. Bunch of plebeians.
But as far as like other ones, like I'm trying to think of something that's a little more high risk. I mean, the other clear one that I'm sure Patrick will say is Christmas Story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just so fucking good. That's the one that like as a kid, you know, and now that I'm an adult looking back at my childhood, like you just relate so strongly to it because it brings you back to your childhood. Just all those feelings of the holidays and stuff, like, and just everything is just, It's a lot like how being, you know, a young kid was. So I love that one to death. I think that's great. I watch it when it's marathoning. And then, I don't know, I'm trying to think.
Are these in any particular order, or are you just naming the movie?
I'm trying to give the three in no particular order. But I think so I'm trying to give one that's like a controversial one.
All right.
So my guilty pleasure Christmas film that I do watch almost every year, but I know is trash, but I have to keep watching it because I am also trash, is Love Actually.
You know, okay. I've never seen that movie.
Yeah, it's, oh, you never seen it?
Yeah, okay. I've never seen it.
If you ever, it kind of started the tendency for a little bit there. Remember how movie studios were putting out movies where there were like a dozen different characters and like a dozen different storylines?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So that was the one that started it.
Okay.
Yeah, you had like, it was Christmas time, and there were like a dozen different characters that were like loosely connected, and each of them had their own little story. Right. And so it was like telling their Christmas story from like all these different people. And it had a really star-studded cast. Like it had like Alan Rickman, Liam Neeson, like a bunch of like Colin Firth, a ton of really talented actors in it. And so, but it's like super sappy, like really fucking sappy, saccharine sappy, but it's a lot of fun and romantic and stuff, and like it's definitely one of those things that I'm like, yeah, this has no like real value, but it's fun for me because I am awful trash human. So yeah, those are for me. Those are my, I would say those are the three that every year I do watch.
I like that you listed, of those three, you listed two that I don't have to choose now, with both It's a Wonderful Life and Christmas Story.
Those are the easy ones, right? Like, I took the low hang, I feel like.
Yeah, well, go. I appreciate it. All right, Patrick, do you want to go next?
Sure. So I'm not quite sure how long my list is going to be. I was thinking, I think three doesn't really do it justice.
We can always go back to Ian and expand if as we go along. So feel free to start the expansion if you need to.
So my clear number one is not even close. And as I've gotten older, it's gotten stronger to a almost religious level, is A Christmas Story.
Yep.
I have not watched it yet this year. And for the past 2 years,
shocked.
I usually save it for Christmas or Christmas Eve is usually what I've started to like, either if not on purpose, but it's just sort of something that's happened where I don't seem to watch it until those days.
Right. So that's exactly it. So especially the past like maybe 2 or 3 years, I don't want to watch it too early in the season because it's full blown nostalgia driving Christmas once we watch A Christmas Story.
Right.
So I have not watched it yet. I will probably watch it this weekend, and I'll watch it at least 4 times on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day.
Yep.
So that's clearly number one. Also clearly number two, and it has risen over the years. And I think it's as I've gotten older, I've just related a lot more with the adult characters in it. Is National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Well said. Yes, same here.
And so, like, clearly number two, it's usually the movie that I start my Christmas season with, and that's what happened this year again. And I usually watch it a few times throughout the season. I've watched it twice.
Point, though, right? Because, like, when I was a kid, I thought Clark Griswold was, like, a total idiot. But like now as an adult, I definitely sympathize with Clark Griswold. Like, it's so odd. Like, I think this year was the first time I watched it just after Thanksgiving, and the scene where he's in the attic watching the old movies where his parents, like when I was a kid, that was like a throwaway scene. Like, I was like, oh, I can go to the bathroom now.
Right.
But like now as an adult, like, it makes me think about like that a lot, where I'm like, oh, like one day when I have my own family, am I going to like look back at these Christmas scenes with his family? Like, it struck a lot more to home this time around.
Yep. And I think for me as well, because I kind of live and work in corporate America, his interactions in corporate America and his life is a little bit more familiar. I can relate to, like, the whole thing with the Christmas bonus. Now,
yeah,
I don't like budget my Christmas bonus or anything, but I get one, and I every single year I go through the same thing of how much is it going to be, like, is it like, what can we do with it, you know, blah 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 blah. And so just that whole dynamic as well rings home to me too. So I think last year when we did this, I may have put National Lampoon's at number two, but like, it was much more in the ether with the rest of the Christmas universe. This year, it is very clearly number two. The gap between two and three is mammoth wide. So
I agree with your pick so far.
All right. So next, I kind of going in an opposite direction, and 3 through 5 are interchangeable, I guess. Going in the opposite direction. A movie that I loved as a kid and would have been a solid number two, but I hate more and more as time goes on, is the original Santa Claus.
Yeah.
With Tim Allen.
Yep.
I think every time I watch it and every year that goes by, I feel like Charlie is a more and more annoying character that needs to shut the fuck up.
It's a spoiled little brat.
Yep. And the whole, like,
this
Neil,
is why
the
your parents are divorced
angle. Yeah, is really
so weird. Sorry.
So that one is going down. And then to round off, two other movies that I watch every year that I don't feel like my Christmas would be complete if I didn't watch them, but I don't really list them as my favorites. Number four, I guess, would be Elf.
Ooh, Will Ferrell.
The end of Elf really bothers me because I think it's really stupid, but it's funny and I like it. And then number five, and this usually is the most controversial pick, but I love this movie and everybody can go to hell, is the Jim Carrey version of How the Grinch Stole Christmas. I really enjoy that movie.
You rank that above the original Grinch?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I don't like the original animated Grinch.
Interesting.
I think it's a very boring tale.
I think I enjoyed the songs of the original Grinch more than I actually do the movie. There's something about
I enjoyed the movie. I don't know.
I don't hate the movie. I just kind of enjoyed the songs more than it.
The Jim Carrey Grinch, more and more to me, seems like the kind of movie where if it's on in the background, I don't mind it, but I don't really like to pay that much attention to it. And then, but the one I think is interesting that, like, I agree with your stance on Santa Claus. To me, it has not aged well. But the one for me also that has not particularly aged well is Elf.
Really?
Part of it is because I've never been like a huge like Will Ferrell fan in the like physical comedy and stuff. I acknowledge that he is a phenomenal physical comedy actor. It's just not necessarily always for me. There are some scenes in that are really great. Like I actually really love the scene where he's dancing with the workers in the basement. Doing like sorting and stuff. I think that's a lot of fun. But I would say that to me, like that movie has like a lot of awkward comedy, which I typically don't like. And then it also, I really don't like the forced romance between him and Zooey Deschanel because like it always gets me a little weirded out when you force romance with a character that is supposed to be like that is continually characterized as the mind of a child. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, this is weird. I'm like, if you think about it for any length of time, like this is very odd. So. And like I try not to think about it overly much, and like so, but yeah, like it. Not that it's bad, but it's just not for me.
Yep, I'm fine with that.
A lot of people love it. Like a lot of people are like crazy about it. So.
Oh yeah, yeah. And if anything,
like it's kind of like a Santa Claus because like so. Just one more comment, Richard, and then you can go on. Okay. But The thing about the Santa Claus or a thing about Elf and then like the Santa Claus and stuff is that I would rank them lower overall if I was doing some like a top 100 master list. But on a concise list where I just am sitting and thinking about the movies I have to watch or else I don't feel like Christmas is really here, it shows up on the list. But like other movies like Miracle on 34th Street and like Charlie Brown Christmas and Jingle All the Way is another good example of that are like all great Christmas movies that I might rank higher in like an overall movie list. It's just they don't have that nostalgia for me. And I think feel like there might be a lot of people in my age bracket, in our age bracket, that kind of have that same weird tug.
I agree. I would think that I think that Elf is a weird movie because of the fact that people have really, really loved that movie. And each year it seems like it gains more momentum into people trying to force it into that classic Christmas movie. But I feel like you're kind of right, Pat. It feels there's like a deterioration on it. I can like sense almost where it's aging badly each year, despite the push for it to be like super big. It's just sort of like. I'll watch it or see it in advertisements for it, and I'm like, all right, I guess. But all right, so my list is we got Rocky IV, Silent Night, Deadly Night. We got Serendipity. Oh, this is the wrong list. So I was looking at my list, and I was going to mention Die Hard. I was going to mention Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, because Kiss Kiss Bang Bang is my favorite movie of, like, probably all time. But I started to think, what about, if I'm going to list, like, Christmas movies, an idea formed in my head of, like, well, these are movies that you wouldn't really watch outside of Christmas. Like you have to watch it during Christmas time, because... If you were to turn them on in March or August or something, it'd be really weird to all of a sudden start watching one of these movies And so I started to eliminate the ones that I love to sort of comically say. And like Die Hard and Kiss Kiss Bang Bang could easily be watched at any time during the year, and no one would, like, you know, bat an eyelash at it. So I agree with Ian and with Christmas Story and with It's Wonderful Life. And also, Wonderful Life has actually, like, gained momentum for me. Like, when I was a kid, it was that movie, like, National Lampoon was for Pat, where it was like, I'm just, this is the time to get some cookies, this is the time to leave the room. Now it's gotten a lot better. I actually, for my list, Santa Claus is actually one that has actually aged better for me, in my opinion. Like, I still hate Charlie. I don't like Charlie as a character, but, like, when I was a kid, I really didn't like this movie because I didn't like the idea that, like, as a kid, I was like, oh, I don't, when you look through Charlie's eyes, like, I don't like my dad leaving for an entire year. That was the sad part of the movie. And it was weird. But as I get older, I've suddenly started appreciating it more because the dad gets away from Charlie.
Oh, my God.
No, that's not the real reason. But, like, there's a certain there's a certain charm to the movie. And it's almost like that old magic feel of what a lot of the older Christmas movies had to them that I sort of appreciate seeing in a more modern light. I don't know. It's hard to describe the Santa Claus. I think that the other Santa Clauses, like sequels, have aged way badly, way quicker than it has. But the first one, there's something, it's just kind of cool the way it's all introduced and the concept kind of revealed and everything. So that one's one. It's hard to separate these two, so I'm going to kind of lump them together. And when I say it, I think you guys will forgive me. But the first and second, Home Alone, that's one of my all-time favorite movies as well. Just
never connected with those.
Oh, man. They're so good. Like, one, it's John Williams doing the music, so already it's just fantastic. But, like listening to that, listening to all the moments that are built into this movie, it's so cool to the way it's all put together in just, it's mostly about home invasion, but it's, like, sort of wrapped into what the value of family is on Christmas and, like, when you don't have it. It's some, I don't know, there's something, like, as a kid, you love it for the pranks that are done, but as an adult getting older, it's, you love it because of the fact that there actually is some more stuff in there, and that, unlike Charlie, Kevin is actually a likable character, that you enjoy to see him sort of figure these things out.
Yeah. I've seen this, like, pop around Reddit and stuff a lot, so, I mean, I'm sure you've both seen it, too, but, like, definitely as an adult, you start to wonder what the hell Kevin's dad did to afford that.
I know. Oh, my God. They're in first class. He's in a limo. People are calling, like, welcome, Mr. McAllister, to the Ritz or whatever.
Oh, my God. Anyway.
Yeah, it's a fantastic it's a fantastic movie, and we have no idea what his dad did for a living, and geez. So that one's that one. I also enjoy Jingle All the Way. I know.
Of course you did.
Of course. Okay, so on paper, you're like, Christmas movie, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Sinbad. And you're like, this sounds like the worst thing in the world. And put together, it's not like, it's not going to be those that kind of movie that people like Patrick are going to be like saying they have to watch. But the fact that it works as well as it does is pretty great. And it's one of the funniest movies I've watched on Christmas. Just the Sinbad, I think, brings it home, to be honest, as the mailman who is constantly saying, like, back off, this is a homemade explosive device. It's just great. And then I always enjoy The Christmas Carol, but I enjoy it even more when Bill Murray's involved. And Scrooged is another movie of mine that I just love to watch during the Christmas. Honestly, looking through my list, it starts to make me question about my own sanity, my Christmas movies. But TV producer instead of what was Ebenezer? He was like an accountant, banker guy, right?
He was a financier. He's like a loan shark, essentially.
Yeah. So instead, it's a TV producer who's trying to put on a Christmas special for The Christmas Carol, and is visited by the three ghosts, and hilarity ensues. It's man, it is a stupid movie at times, but it's so funny, and Bill Murray is just Bill Murray, and is great. So, how many is that? One, two. That's all five of mine, I think, right now.
That's a lot, yeah. Yeah. All right.
So, I'd like to add just Charlie Brown Christmas to mine.
Okay.
Because I do watch it every year, and it's charming, and it's, you know, my childhood. So
it's short.
It's 1965. It I think short. It's most people's childhood at this point.
So I'll,
it is I short, add, yeah.
I will add Charlie Brown Christmas and the Animated Grinch to my list. Those two are classics. I love them. They're perfect little Christmas shorts that are great.
That is true. They the advantages of some of these are like how short they are, and you kind of get in and get out, and you get your Christmas feels. It's almost like another shot in the arm for you.
And one dark horse one that we haven't mentioned that very few people I think have watched, but because my dad is like a huge like old movie fan, and there's 1,000 different versions.
Is that Holiday Inn?
No. There's 1,000 different versions of A Christmas Carol.
Oh.
My dad likes to watch one from like the 1930s, I think it was. It's a really old version, black and white, like even before the George C. Scott one.
Oh,
and
wow.
It's my favorite one. I'm trying to find the, what is it, 1930s. It's my favorite version just because it's like it stays really close to the like the actual the book, like it's like that, it's really like close to the original. So yeah, that's all. So just a throwback to like really old Christmas Carol.
I want to add the claymations, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer and Santa Claus Comes to Town. It's something I always forget to mention because I never get hyped for these movies. But it's one of those things where it just doesn't feel complete if I haven't watched at least one of them during Christmas season. They're goofy, they're corny, they're poorly claymated, but I love them to death, and it's just a lot of fun watching them.
And on the flip side of that, I agree with that. But on the flip side of that, I do not enjoy Frosty the Snowman.
I agree with you. Frosty's the weaker of the claymation ones. Or the cartoon one. There's a cartoon, and then I think there's a claymation one. I can't remember.
I think it's just cartoon.
I think you're right. Yeah. Okay.
Oh, sorry. It's 1951. Alistair Sim, Christmas Carol, 1951 with Alistair Sim. That was the version that he watches. So anyway. Yeah.
All right.
Cool. So that's the fun, positive ones, guys. let's talk about. This might be just as equally fun, but what's the worst Christmas movies you've ever had to submit yourself to?
Oh, man. So
who's going first?
I'm going to go first because I might have to bail halfway through this category.
Damn it, Ian.
But
bah, humbug.
So I'm going to say that one I watched this year, Patrick watched the, what's it called? The
Christmas Chronicles?
Christmas Chronicles on Netflix. Mm-hmm. So now here's the thing, though, is I don't know that this counts because, like, are we talking about stuff that, like, does it have to have had a theatrical release?
No. It just, like, because it just has to be about Christmas. When you watched it, it was something that was just, like, garbage or confusion to you.
So I watched The Christmas Chronicles because it's on Netflix, and Susan had told me that some people that she had watched it had told her that it was good. And so we watched it, and like I did not finish it. So Kurt Russell was in it, and it was very obvious that they spent the majority of their budget getting Kurt Russell. And he looked like he was having a blast. But like the child actors that they had for this film were some of the worst child actors I think I've ever seen in film. Like they could not act. Like we're talking like Anakin Skywalker levels of cannot act. Like it was really bad. And
I was being a little harsh there, Ian.
the writing was super bad. The child actors were horrible. The CGI was like pretty freaking awful. Like, and then the part that got me like out of my chair, like I need to leave the room, was there was a scene where one of the main girl character goes to the North Pole, and then she meets these elves, which are all CG, like little CG creepy creatures that are supposed to be.
They're cute. Minions.
Yeah, essentially, they're like they're budget minions, but they're right. Awful. And then at some point, one of the elves starts flossing, you know, that dance move that the young little kids do.
Yeah, you know, the one from Fortnite.
I'm like, nope, I'm done. I can't do this. Like, it was awful. It was so bad. Like, and I got that it was trying to be so ham-fisted with the story, because it was like the whole idea was, all right, these kids' dad died recently, and so they're spending Christmas, like, their mom is doing her best and, like, working a lot of shifts and stuff, and, like, the brother is a car thief. Like, he's like, I'm like, they're trying to paint this picture that he's a delinquent, and right. that because
they go a little too far with a little with
too
a...
far yeah
yeah
like the show the movie that did it okay was in the third Santa Claus, which I did not like as a film, or maybe it was the second. The one of the Santa Claus sequels where what's his face, the kid
Charlie,
like he's starting to like he's lashing out, and he starts like he's basically just like spray painting shit and tagging stuff and like vandalizing property.
You know, like those delinquents do.
What'd you say?
I said, you know, like those delinquents do.
Yeah, but like, so I'm like, that's an appropriate level of lashing out for a holiday film. The main kid in this movie, he's stealing cars. Stealing cars, Grand Theft Auto. I'm like, okay, like, kind of hard to say, like, this kid's a good kid who's just lost his way. Like, I'm like, he's not pulling pranks that are, like, you know, disrespecting authority or whatever. So, like, and then when they tried to really reel it back in, and, like, they have this girl, the kid, the brother and sister sitting on these church steps talking about their dad. And it's just so ham-fisted, and the writing is so lazy. And it's just like there are some scenes that just go on forever, and it's like very awkward, and like the writing is super bad. So
I think you're being a little harsh.
I really don't think I am. So, but all right, and besides that one, which was awful, have either of you ever seen the movie A Christmas Kiss?
I've heard of it, I think.
Sounds like a Hallmark movie.
Yes.
It basically is. So I was, Susan, this is another movie I never saw until this year, which was Susan and I were at home just chilling. And Susan was watching, just like flipped to a random channel. And it was this movie. And like, it was about basically this woman who works at this design company. And she falls in love with a guy who's getting married to her boss. And her boss is a bitch. And so, like, you know, the whole thing is, like, over the course of the film, this guy falls in love with the design assistant instead of, and, like, decides not to marry her boss.
What a homewrecker.
Like, yeah, pretty much. But, like, it's done, like, she's supposed to be, like, really cute and doesn't, like, cross any lines or anything like that. But the whole thing was, like, this is the ultimate in, like, trash cinema. Like, it's, like, the ultimate Hallmark trash movie. But the thing was... is like Susan went to work, and like I was making fun of her for watching this movie. Like, what the hell are we watching? This is terrible. What are we doing? She's like, all right, well, I'm going to work, so you can change it. I'm like, fine. And like, I'm laying on the couch eating like Hershey Kisses, and I just can't stop watching it.
That's the Hallmark trick. That's how they trick you. They just suck like, you in.
Before I knew it, I watched the whole film. I'm like, this movie is horrible because it held me hostage on this couch, and it's so bad. Like, ugh. Don't ever start watching A Christmas Kiss, because you will probably watch all of it and hate yourself afterwards.
I think I've seen this movie. My mom watches a ton of Hallmark movies for Christmas, and they're all really, really bad.
It's the worst. It's super bad.
Oh, jeez, yeah.
It's like everything is comically overdone. The woman, the bad character, she's like this comically villainous like caricature, and like the girl is like comically like, you know, cutesy and like super, you can't possibly hate her. And the guy has like the worst hair I've ever seen on an actor. And like, he's supposed to be like this like really desirable hunk, and he's really not, he's super dumb. So anyway, those are my two worst Christmas movies.
All right. I guess if we're going, do you want to go Pat next?
All right. So I feel like
you might hit
honorable mention to Frosty.
Anyway, yeah.
Yeah.
So, I feel like there are different bars here of bad Christmas movies. Like, because there are plenty of Christmas movies that I don't like that I will recognize are fairly good films. For example, and this is not to jump into this conversation, this is just a drive-by shot here, is like Home Alone. Like, I really don't like Home Alone. And
wow. Hates
I would be tempted
one of my
to
favorites.
Put it on like... Right. I would be tempted to put it on a list like this. But I'm not, because I feel like as an overall movie, there are movies that are much worse. And I feel like Ian's list kind of goes towards that edgy, oh, I hate Home Alone style thing. So I'm not defending A Christmas Chronicle, and I've never seen A Christmas Kiss, but like it's definitely a different bar than the few movies that I'm going to mention right now. Okay.
I just want to say that Home Alone is the highest grossing Christmas movie of all time. Okay. So just, you know, you're going against a lot of money here.
Right. Exactly. So anyway, so no particular order. The first one I'm going to mention is Santa Claus Conquers the Martians. Have you, either of you, seen this movie?
Yes. No, oh, damn it. You sniped mine. I was totally going to mention this one. Yes. Pat, yep. And Pat, Phil,
are you sure that you didn't get this mixed up?
No, it's
movies?
Very bad.
This is something that friends in high school tried to, like, in a funny manner, but like in a joke that's gone too long, kept trying to say, you gotta watch, it's the best movie ever. No, it's so good. It's so, it's like, you start watching, you're like, oh my God. Oh my God, this is bad.
Yep. So the premise of the movie, Ian, if you've never seen it or heard of it, is that the Martian civilization, the leaders of the Martians are upset that the Martian children are watching too much Earth TV and are becoming like indoctrinated. And so,
and they don't have Santa Claus. They see all these Christmas movies and they don't have Santa Claus up there and they want Santa Claus.
Right. And so they go and they kidnap Santa Claus, like, and two Earth children along with them. And so then they, like, I mean, it just all kind of flows from there. So
I think the children's names are like Billy and Betty too, like something really like you didn't think too hard to get their names in.
Yeah, I can't remember, but anyway, it's an awful movie. And if you can make through all of it, all 81 minutes of it, then you are a saint.
Oh shit! Sorry, what? I interrupted you. Go continue, but I forgot the worst Christmas movie of all time, and I apologize.
Anyway,
all
right.
Second one I want to mention, very briefly, is because, I mean, I guess if we're talking like made for TV movies, like non-theatrical release movies, we definitely have to give a mention of the Star Wars Christmas special.
Yes, that was exactly what I thought of.
Because like, and this is really what I mean, because we've all seen the Star Wars Christmas special.
Yeah.
Like, are we honestly saying that the Star Wars Christmas special is the same quality level as a Santa Claus?
No, I'm sorry,
Christmas Chronicles, you know?
I will defer to you. I completely forgot about the Star Wars Christmas special, and it is hands down.
That's kind of where it belongs, is being forgotten, Ian. Like,
right.
No, but I mean, like, I hadn't watched it until last year, and I literally could not watch it in longer than 10-minute intervals at a time.
It's really bad. It's so bad, and like it really, I feel like a Star Wars Christmas special is a nice anchoring point for when people talk either about Christmas movies or they talk about anime or they talk about any other topic, and they just haphazardly throw the word cash grab out there. Because, yes, like, we're branding franchise movies incorrectly because we're trying to milk more money out of a popular name, you know, but that is nowhere close to the cash grab level of a Star Wars Christmas special.
Oh, it's so bad. Carrie Fisher sings.
It's so infamous because it's very rare for something to make it onto network television nowadays with that level of incompetence. And and also lack of awareness for the source material, because Lucas had nothing to do with how, like, the content or production for it. He, like, of course it was outsourced to the people at the network. So they obviously did not understand Star Wars. They understood variety television, which at that time was already on the way out, like, right, as a medium for television. Like, it was something that, like, the networks were trying to keep alive, but viewers were kind of getting old with. So you have something that doesn't even work in the modern landscape of television, and definitely doesn't work for Star Wars.
No. You don't appreciate the introduction of Life Day?
Speaking of which, to be fair, though, like variety shows, there is a Christmas movie on Netflix right now called, like, A Very Murray Christmas or something like that.
Oh, heard about it from last year, but I never watched
it. Yeah, so I watched it the other day as I was making dinner. And I mean, I'm not saying that it's groundbreakingly amazing, and both of you probably will watch it thinking that I'm recommending it and then hate it. But if you like variety shows and you like stars, like George Clooney comes on and sings and everything.
Is this the Bill Murray Christmas?
Yeah.
I've seen it. Yeah, no, it's with a, so I watched that last year, I think, or the year when it came out. And it's not amazing. It's not, mm-hmm. it's not great. I think the best moment is when Chris Rock shows up. And right. and like the whole place is snowed out, and Bill Murray's just like desperate for any celebrity to get onto his special, and Chris Rock happens to be walking by, and he effectively kidnaps him and throws this ugly sweater on him and has him sing like a music number with him until the power goes out, and just like Chris Rock's expression of like terror as he's looking for a way out is just like fantastic during the whole time. But it's not bad. It's just sort of like, There aren't enough hilarity moments that I expect from Bill Murray to make me appreciate it, because when you see Bill Murray, you kind of expect like a lot more comedy, and it's kind of you know, it's
I mean, it's a variety show.
Yeah, it's a variety show.
Yeah. All right, so next I'm going to take a left turn to something a bit more mainstream, because and also to be a little edgy about this.
Okay.
I really don't like movies that are off of short stories. So which is funny, because I really enjoy the Jim Carrey Grinch's Stole Christmas. But the reason why I don't is because they tend to stretch it or just match it over and over again and do it in exceedingly terrible ways. So I hate, with a capital H, most renditions of A Christmas Carol. And not all of them. However, I do enjoy stage plays of A Christmas Carol a lot. It's just it's a 72-page story or so. And there just is not enough material there to rehash it every year in 70 trillion different ways. And so everybody does something a little bit different in order to try to make that work. Also, in that same conversation, that same sentence, I really dislike the movie The Christmas Shoes.
The Christmas never Shoes.
Seen never seen
Is that
it.
A Michael Jordan film?
I thought it was just something that middle-aged women watched, but
I thought like Michael Jordan with the shoes. Make me like.
No,
Mike.
It's like, so the idea, it's a short story. It's a short like Christian-based story about like the, and there's a song, there's a famous song attached to it. Where like this kid can't afford to buy his shoes for his mom, who's like dying from cancer or something like that. The story is a fairly excellent religious based story if you like those things, and it's extremely short. However, the movie, which every middle aged woman loves, as you guys pointed out, is awful. I hate it, and I think it's because of the same concept of trying to stretch short stories into feature length films.
And yet you like, yeah, like I'm going right. to definitely latch on to the contradiction of you liking Jim Carrey Grinch, because that has a lot of like self-made content to stretch that story out.
Yes.
So are for me, I just like, I just feel like it works. And I think a lot of it has to do with childhood nostalgia, because I mean, it came out when I was a kid and everything.
Yeah,
but
it was
like,
pretty big when we were kids. Like, it made a lot of money.
Yeah, but I don't know. I feel like all of that works, and they don't make a new version of it every year. Whereas with things like A Christmas Carol, I mean, how many versions of A Christmas Carol are there just in movie format?
Too many to count.
Right. And my mom's favorite version is the one that stars Patrick Stewart, who does an amazing Ebenezer Scrooge on stage and does an okay job in the movie too. It's just, it was like a TNT made for TV movie. And it's really poorly animated and stuff. I mean, it's a live action film, but like the ghosts and everything. And so, yeah, I don't know. I just, progressively as I get older, I get turned more and more off of video versions of A Christmas Carol rather watch it on stage.
Didn't Sesame Street put out a pretty good one like a while back?
Probably.
Anyway.
All right. I'm going to go. Pat stole mine with the Santa Claus Contributions. But I have another one. It's actually, I think a lot of people actually like this movie, and I never could figure out why, but it's Jack Frost. 1998 one where the guy dies and becomes a snowman.
Yep.
I don't like that one either.
So it's sort of the similar reason of I think I don't like Angels in the Outfield as well. I'm not a fan of Dead Dads. I'm not a fan of, like, this weird, like, the kid can't move on from death and has to, like some sort of afterlife-y mumble-jumble is, like, going in there. But in the end, is kind of left alone as saying bye to the person anyway. So I'm not... Jack Frost does it even worse with, like, a snowman, and it's just this goofy, weird, like, corny movie with just, God, there's so much about this movie that I just don't like, and it's just so, like, cringy. The kid's name is also Charlie. Fucking hell. I don't like the character Charlie. He's not identical, but he's pretty darn close to the Santa Claus Charlie. It's two, I don't like the concept of coming back as a fucking snowman. And three, like, at the end, like, the same corny line of, like, basically, like, I'll always be with you, and then, like, return to the afterlife. Like, it's just, like, played out and done, and it's so bad, and I really don't like Jack Frost. Also, as a kid when I first saw it, the snowman legitimately scared me. Like, the animatronics on that snowman were frightening. So, Jack Frost, number one after Santa Claus Conquers the Martians.
So, just one comment about that as we wrap up. So, wasn't the biggest problem, and I might be getting this wrong, but, like, the biggest problem with Jack Frost is didn't they release, like, a horror movie about
almost in the same year or something, within a year of each other.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, not great.
Poor decision.
It's like they knew.
And it was about a snowman.
Yep.
Like, I mean, it was like essentially the same thing, except instead of the dad dying and it being a heartwarming tale, it was a horror about a serial killer dying and becoming a snowman.
Yeah, it was a heart carving tale. Get out, Richard. Santa Claus Conquers the Martians. One more comment on that is the bear scene. I don't know if you remember the bear scene, Pat, but. Where they basically have a man in a bear suit, and it's very obvious that it's a man in a bear suit.
Right.
And it's just really, it's really bad. It's one of those, like, I feel like Santa Claus Conquers the Martians, why people recommend it, is more of, like, we should get a group together and watch it to make fun of it.
It's Mystery Science Theater.
Yeah. And I think that sometimes people try to hype up how good it is because it's bad, rather than saying, like, no, it's so bad, it's good. Like, we're here to make fun of it. Like, they're just... They like a lot of positive words are used too much when it comes to this movie, but it is a really, really bad movie. You guys took a lot of mine, so maybe next time I should have gone first. But let's see. There's a couple movies that, like, I just don't like. Okay, so this isn't a movie that's bad, and I understand, like, people might enjoy it and stuff, and it's fine. But I've never enjoyed any of the Miracle on 34th Streets. Like,
really?
I'm not big on throwing, like it's kind of the endangerment that Santa Claus runs into. Even though I like Santa Claus, but, like, the parts I don't like are, what? Surprise, surprise! Who would have thought that lawyers and legality would ruin Christmas? And that's kind of what the whole movie of Miracle on 34th Street is. It's just nothing but law and courts and...
It's a bit heavy-handed.
Yeah, and that's the part. So it just doesn't feel like it's super big on Christmas. It just makes it feel like it's a big hubbub-a-bloo about a guy who thinks he's Santa Claus. Or, you know, that's the whole premise, is that they're all like, well, this guy thinks he's Santa Claus. And, you know, he actually is. But
he's bringing money to Macy's and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. And so it's just like, it's just like, I can't believe you're wasting the court's time with this case. And also, like, it's just, yeah, it's heavy handed. I understand that a lot of people see it as a classic, both versions, the older one and the newer one. But for me, I just never could get into that movie. It just wasn't something that I ever, ever enjoyed. So
it's kind of hard to connect to the characters, because the characters are more... They're more archetypes than actually people.
Yeah, they're not really a character. They're a caricature of something. It's true. And that's kind of, that might be because of the fact that it came out in 1947, the original one, at least.
See, but I don't have that same problem with George Bailey, and that character is super freaking old.
Yeah, you're right. Like, 1946 is the advantage on that one.
He's just trying to provide for his family and, like, do right. But like, you know, I never felt a problem trying to connect to him as a character. So I don't know if it's fair to say just because it's old.
You have a point. It's something that it's hard. Like I think I could probably count three times I watched Miracle on 34th Street through my entire life, and just never could get into either of them. But that's unfortunate.
Well, I hate to interrupt, but I do have to go.
You realize you're on a cell phone. You could just walk into the car with this, right?
Huh?
You could just walk to your car with the cell phone.
That's fair, but my phone also is at 2% battery, so it's going to die on.
Ah, there it is. All right, well, do you guys have anything else you want to mention? Bad movies or anything?
We went surface level.
We haven't dug deep on anything, but I think we've also covered a pretty good the obvious ones.
I would say the only other thing I want to say is Merry Christmas to both of you, and I hope you have a wonderful holiday.
Merry Christmas to you too, Ian. And to all, good night.
Well, I will. But yeah, I will talk to you guys again soon.
Oh, Pat, did you ever like the Polar Express movie with Tom Hanks?
I went through a phase when I was younger that I really enjoyed. But
I enjoyed the book. I enjoyed the tape, but the movie.
The tape was really good.
Yeah, the movie, like, it was close. It was so close at some points.
I thought it was padded.
Yeah, that's the thing. You know, you guys want to talk about filler content for like the Grinch and with the Jim Carrey one, but geez, with
the hot chocolate song did it for me.
Yeah.
I gotta go.
All right. Bye, Ian. All right, Pat. Yeah, the hot chocolate song kind of killed it. It was that and something like the friends of the kid, like, or the kid, the people the kid met, like, all of them kind of annoyed me. The whole, like, I've been wanting to do that my whole life, like, ringing, like, the they're in the Santa Claus workshop thing, and he blows, like, the horn of one of the train carts they're in, and I'm like, your whole life, really? You're, like, six. Like, it's, this has been what? I don't know. It's, like, there's some parts of that movie that I really, really hated, and there are parts, like, when the train's actually going through the wilderness, and that's the part that sticks out to me in the tape for the book, or the original book, or whatever, when, like, the train goes through the wilderness and mentions the wolves and stuff, and I felt like the movie got pretty darn close to nailing that, that feeling I had when it was, like, this kind of a creepy, but, like, you're inside of a train, and you're secure with Coco kind of a feel, so I thought it was close, it just wasn't, the whole movie just felt very, very filler. But anyway. Anyway, so Pat, do you have anything else you wanted to mention about winter stuff and winter festivities?
No, I think that's it.
Do you have any news updates or last words?
Let me think. So
what are you doing for the holidays?
I'm staying home and Brooke is cooking a goose.
Ooh. Do you guys usually have goose or turkey?
We usually have ham.
Oh.
We have turkey at Thanksgiving, ham at Christmas, and then Brooke's family traditionally does ribeyes.
Interesting.
I'm sorry, not ribeyes. Prime rib is what
still interesting.
So what we're doing is my parents are coming down and are going to be here for Christmas Day.
So they're coming to Mississippi. So, have they actually visited you guys before?
Once.
Okay.
So once I told them that we weren't coming up, because they're in Universal Studios right now at doing the Harry Potter World thing on vacation.
Okay.
And they're like, oh, we'll just stop on by on our way back. Well, it's not really on the way, but I mean, whatever floats your boat. So they're arriving on Sunday, and then so the traditional Christmas Eve meal at Brooke's family's house is veal parmesan. So we're going to have veal parmesan on Christmas Eve.
Okay.
And then instead of having prime rib, which is Brooke's traditional thing, we're going to have a goose. So
cool.
We have to pick up the goose tomorrow in Jackson. And hopefully it'll go well. We have everything down. It's our first time, so I hope it goes well.
Young boy, you know that goose in the butcher shop? The one as big as me? That's the one!
There you go.
There you go.
It's going to be us.
Yeah, I'm working for Christmas and Christmas Eve, so that will be fun. Nice. And then I have to work the day after Christmas because, in fact, that was the day that screwed me over. It's December 26th, the day that nobody would take off or take my days. So I won't be able to celebrate Christmas until December 27th, in which I will be driving down to visit my parents then. And I think they're not. Nice. I think they're going to hold off until that day as well. And then my brother will eventually get there. And then we'll have... The usual tradition is we have... my mom makes, actually, lasagna on Christmas Eve.
Yeah, my mom would do that, too.
Yep, it's pretty darn good. And then turkey and stuffing, mashed potatoes, all that. Pretty much it's second Thanksgiving dinner for Christmas dinner. Mm. And that's so that's what I have to look forward to. Of course, presents, but, like, you know, whatever. But yeah, it's gonna be an interesting year. I'm a little bitter about work, but you know, it's like kind of it's, you know, there's not much else I could do. So at the very least, I have this plan is in motion. Honestly, the only thing I'm actually mad about is like as I'm driving down, and I turn on the radio, it's not gonna be Christmas movies because or Christmas songs because the holiday is so goddamn commercialized that, like, the moment Christmas is over, Christmas dies, and so nobody, like, celebrates it anymore. So I'm a little pissed off about that I'll have to basically Spotify or Google Play my Christmas songs in, and I won't get, like, the Christmas feel in between each song with the commercial. Yeah, so that's a little thing that, it's a tiny little minute thing, but it's one of those things that I know is gonna, like, bother me all the way down, but oh well. Mm-hmm. Cool. But yeah, so well, I'm excited, but
yeah,
should be a fun time. Yeah, all right, Pat, this is actually probably going to be our last episode for the year, because
goodbye 2018.
Yeah, goodbye 2018. So unless somehow we have time to squeeze one in during the holidays, but I doubt that. I think all of us are pretty much busy. Ian's moving. I'm going to be down at my parents with spotty internet, and then you actually might be the most free, but I actually don't know what your schedule is during that time.
Yeah, pretty open, but we'll see. Maybe we'll do a wrap-up 2018 episode after the first of the year or something.
That'd be cool. Okay, yeah. Let's pencil that in and see what we can come up with.
There we go.
Sweet. All right. Well, then, Patrick, thank you so much for coming. Ian's not here, but I'm sure he'll re-listen. And so, Ian, thank you so much for coming as well. It's been a shorter episode, but, you know, it's nice to get the shorter ones in every once in a while. So, But yeah, from all of us here at League of Mediocre Gentlemen. Oh, you know what? Here I am about to start the close down, and I didn't even do my my due diligence of the final, like, you know, business things and doobly doos and stuff to mention about OTN. So if you are curious, if you want to disagree with us or you want to talk to us, you can email us at leagueofmediocregentlemen@otnmedia.org. You can also tweet us at the LOMG podcast. There's also a link in the description to join the Discord for the Overtime Network. There are Twitch streams every Tuesday and Thursday. Tuesday at 8:30 for mine and 8 on Thursday. There's also Monday is the Level Up podcast recording with John and Joey. That's, I believe, at 8 as well. So tune in to any of those. You are more than welcome to also comment on the episode on the description in the Overtime Network website. So check that out. So now, from all of us here at League of Amigo Gentlemen and at the Overtime Network, thank you so much for listening. Have a Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, Happy New Year's, and stay at least mediocre level.